Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of Nash Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We've got good, bad, crazy martinis for you, as always. And we start with a good martini at the Supreme Court today. Most folks observing the court went away disappointed because the big three cases were not handed down today. Those are the ones on the Voting Rights Act, affirmative action, and same-sex marriage. There's only a couple weeks left in June, so brace yourself for those in the couple weeks ahead. This one, today, there were four decisions handed down. The biggest one dealing with the ability or not the ability to patent genes. So this from USA Today, the Supreme Court ruling Thursday that human genes cannot be patented, a decision with both immediate benefits for some breast and ovarian cancer patients and long-lasting repercussions for biotechnology research. But it also ruled, Jim, that synthetic DNA, and I'm not an expert on that in any way, shape, or form, can be patented. So essentially, these companies that come up with treatments specific to ailments for genes that are isolated in people who are predisposed to certain genetic problems. The Angelina Jolie story has been referenced a lot today. So basically, the Supreme Court, in a unanimous decision, kind of splitting the baby here. Original human DNA, not patentable. Synthetic DNA, patentable. So Aldous Huxley, I'm sure, is sort of spinning in his grave today.
You know, people who have been reading The Morning Jolt will know my entire understanding of the world comes from late 90s movies. I kind of explained the whole NSA scandal in the context of Enemy of the State, featuring Will Smith and Gene Hackman, which it looks pretty darn prescient in light of what we now know. What really kind of stands out about this, I naturally think of Gattaca, the Ethan Hawke sci-fi movie, a little bit like Huxley's novel. Your social status was very much related to what your genes were. And you were, you know, our protagonist had, you know, less than ideal genes. He had various, disabilities and stuff. And as a result of that, he was not allowed to be one of the special people. And he wanted to be one of the special people and, you know, on the top rungs of society and stuff. The idea that your genetic code, who you are, wouldn't belong to you strikes most people as common sense. And yes, I understand biotech companies have to do a lot of research to isolate the genetic code and stuff, but the idea that somebody else could own your genes, I'm glad the Supreme Court recognized what a nonsensical and problematic idea this is. It really seems strange, the idea of it. And then once they start saying, well, modified DNA or stuff that they do to change it means that someone else could own the patent on that. So I think basically this is, as I understand it, Greg, this amounts to copyright protection for Cylons from Battlestar Galactica. So, once you start creating artificial people, you own the copyright on them. As anyone who knows about the eugenics wars of Star Trek and other things, what's the worst that could happen, right? You know, this really is kind of a frightening, on top of the NSA story, I get the feeling there are a lot of people, but this is our good martini, ladies and gentlemen, that the Supreme Court says corporations can't own your genes, but they can make up genes and they can own those. So when they start designing the dinosaurs of Jurassic Park and genetically engineered minotaurs and stuff like that, they will own the copyright on those. So we really are kind of getting into the realm of what once was considered just science fiction, and it's kind of terrifying. Hopefully, we will not be heading towards some dystopian future of genetically modified monsters eating all of us. But nonetheless, you hope these biotech companies are watching very carefully what they're doing and recognizing the moral consequences of what they're doing. So bravo to the Supreme Court for stepping in and at least trying to establish a little bit of rules of the road for this sort of thing.
Our next two martinis now, both of which deal with the NSA story. And Jim, over the last several days, there's been this huge debate between the civil libertarians and those who have more of a national security hawkish bent. Some of us have both of that. And so the question has been, Edward Snowden, hero or traitor? And some of the more nuanced ones are, well, both. Some have said, absolutely, it's an act of civil disobedience. It's a great thing if you're Rand Paul. Lindsey Graham saying he's a traitor. Well, that debate has played out over the last few days. Jim, I think we can pretty much now say that he is a traitor because Snowden has given another interview, this one to the South China Morning Post, and now he's not just talking about the liberties potentially that have been infringed here by the NSA PRISM program, but now he's talking about how the U.S. actively hacks China, which I don't think should come as a huge surprise. I mean, intelligence communities are going to do that, but to admit it and to admit to some extent how it's happening, he says the PRISM program extends to the people and institutions in Hong Kong and mainland China. He says the NSA has been hacking computers in Hong Kong and on the mainland since 2009. He says there have been more than 61,000 NSA hacking operations globally, with hundreds of targets in Hong Kong and on the mainland. Jim, when you start revealing that kind of stuff, yeah, the long arm of the law should get you and get you hard.
In the morning, Joel, I spotlighted comments from Ace of Spades, who was observing that the whole, you know, Snowden hero or traitor storyline, look, it's worth some discussion, but it really shouldn't be the focus of discussion, because that's kind of a personality dispute. It's kind of, here you go. A bigger question is, all right, so now we know about this program, or at least we think we know about this program. Some of the details are being disputed. Is it a good idea? What was in mind when the Patriot Act was passed, or has it gone well beyond that stuff? And with the war on terror not at the status that it was back in 2001, is it worth looking at this again? Is it worth reevaluating this? Is this, you know, something that's a good idea? Is it, you know, are a lot of us having our personal information vacuumed up by the NSA in the process of their effort to fight terrorism? We all want to stop terrorism, but it's not inconceivable that at some point it's going to go beyond the realm of what is reasonable and just and necessary and prevent enormous opportunity for abuse. So that's our status there. On Snowden revealing that we're hacking the Chinese and getting into their systems and stuff like that, I assume the Chinese know about this already. But nonetheless, when you go to Hong Kong and start basically telling them about what the U.S. is doing to other states, including hostile state, I think there's a large, strong argument to be made that China is fundamentally a hostile state to the U.S. At least our interests don't always align. It doesn't seem like Snowden cares that much about his perception in the United States. And in fact, you look at his interview in the South China Morning Post, he says, you know, I'm doing this for the world, not for America. I'm always very wary of people like that because, you know, if you find yourself in trouble, the world is not going to come save you. Maybe the Navy SEALs will. You know, the United States, you know, but in the end, it's only your own country you can count on for these sorts of things. Snowden is alienating people, and it seems like a good argument to be made that this is not a guy who has the best interests of the United States as a whole in his motive, or at the very least he has a very skewed version of what that is. He's probably not able to distinguish between his best interests and the country's best interests, because telling the world all about how we spy on other countries doesn't seem to be doing much to help the United States of America.
Absolutely not. On to the crazy martini now. And Jim, there have been, as we mentioned, plenty of people who want to drop the hammer legally on Edward Snowden. And now that has expanded a bit. Peter King, former chairman of the House Homeland Security Committee, talking with Megyn Kelly on Fox News on Wednesday. And he says not only should Snowden be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law, but also Glenn Greenwald of The Guardian, not only for what he's already published, but what he's threatening to publish.
I'm talking about Greenwald. Greenwald, not only did he disclose this information, he has said that he has the names of our CIA agents and assets around the world, and they're threatening to disclose that. The last time that was done in this country, we saw a CIA station chief murdered in Greece. No right is absolute, and even the press has certain restrictions. I think it should be very targeted, very selective, and certainly a very rare exception. But in this case, where you have someone who's disclosed secrets like this and threatens to release more, then that, to me, yes, there has to be legal action should be taken against him. This is a very unusual case with life and death implications for Americans.
So, Jim, I think most people, certainly us in the journalistic community, would say that what's been revealed to date doesn't necessarily put any lives in danger, but kind of like if like Edward Snowden now has gone too far, if Greenwald goes too far and starts publishing some of these names that could clearly put lives in danger, then that's a whole different story. But to prosecute for what's already been done is way over the line.
Peter King is starting to turn into one of my least favorite members of Congress, because the bluster to useful information ratio seems to be getting more and more skewed over the time, because here's a fairly key point. So he goes on there and he makes this fairly damning accusation that Glenn Greenwald said he was going to threaten to disclose the names of CIA covert agents and operatives. Glenn Greenwald says he's never said such a thing. And so now, if you're Peter King, where did you get that idea? I mean, did he hear, is he accessed, you know, did he hear it from an NSA spy program? You know? Because if Greenwald threatened to do that, then yeah, Greenwald would be a bad guy. Greenwald would be, you know, in danger of that. And that's the sort of thing where, you know, during the whole discussion of James Rosen and Eric Holder and stuff like that, which, by the way, now Peter King is totally contradicting and totally saying that, oh, you know, prosecuting James Rosen is hunky-dory if you're going to say, hey, let's, you know, toss Glenn Greenwald in jail. if James Rosen's reportings had put somebody's life in danger, we'd be looking at this in a very different way. People have asked me, Jim, how can you defend the press? Is the right to report absolute? Is the First Amendment absolute? And I think, look, if you report information that endangers someone, and not in a theoretical way, like the, you know, the triple bank shot of the YouTube video caused this protest in Benghazi, Libya. But if you, you know, print the name of an undercover cop or something like that, it's known that if this person's name gets out there, someone will try to kill them. That's something where your First Amendment rights either, you know, you first of all, personal responsibility requires you to not put that information out there. And then I think you, at that point, if you are determined to publish it anyway, well, then I think the government can go and try to get an injunction to prevent the publication of that information, because it's not just a standard restriction of speech of criticism of the government or something like that. It's about lives are at stake. Well, in this case, it appears to be a false accusation from Peter King, which is, you know, troubling, unless he knows something the rest of us don't know. And if so, he's going to have to show something. But the, you know, the third thing is, Greg, how familiar are you with Peter King?
I know that he is largely accused of backing the IRA back in the day.
Pretty much. He was like the Irish Republican Army's best friend in the United States and certainly in the U.S. Congress throughout the 80s and 90s. He had a big role in the kind of the peace talks that led to a great lessening of the violence in Northern Ireland. And so I give him a little bit of credit for that. But really, this guy, you know, if hanging around with people accused of terrorism was a big deal, it's kind of interesting to see Peter King, you know, have a total 180 on that. And, you know, obviously, his, you know, he would argue that terrorism is in the eye of the beholder. I think that whatever claim the IRA had to a noble cause really gets undermined once they start blowing people up. And in the case of, I think that applies to almost every terror group. So to hear Peter King coming out and saying we have to put reporters in jail over things that they, alleged threats that they've made that he can't verify or prove and all that stuff, certainly is kind of unnerving. I think, you know, either Peter King needs to switch to decaf or somebody just needs to sit him down and have him breathe into a brown paper bag or something, because it really seems like he's kind of gone around the bend on this. And he's blurring really legitimate concerns and problems with stuff that just seems to be going on inside his head. It's not good for Republicans to have the member and the former chairman of the Homeland Security Committee starting to sound, you know, a little off his rocker.
That's not what you want from a person in that position. So good clarification there. Jim, you are off tomorrow. Have a great time up in New York, and we will talk to you on Monday.
See you Monday, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review, Daniel Foster of National Review Online will be here in Jim's place on Friday. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join Dan and me on Friday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.